This is Radio Free Townsend Hall, brought to you by the School of Information Science and Learning Technologies on the campus of the University of Missouri, Columbia. This is the Library and Information Science Fireside Chat Hour, coming to you regularly at this time every week. Your hosts and topics will change from week to week, but stick around and listen anyway. Who knows what might be learned? And now, from the beautiful Verizon Room... And that's all for this evening. Future programs...
Okay, are we on? Yeah, because of the... Sorry. We're live. This is Charlie Seavey, who also did the intro, which is left over from last year. And I'm sorry about that. We didn't have a chance to do a new one. Couple of ground rules here before I launch into our conversation with this evening's guest. The toll-free number, if you're out there listening... is 866-768-5483. That's 866-768-5483. And our numerous operators are standing by, or at least somebody is, I'm sure. Or if you don't want to talk on the phone, I have my laptop up and running here. You can email me at CVC, which is S-E-A-V-E-Y-C, at Missouri.edu with questions. If you do call and get on the air, the first thing you have to do is mute or turn down your computer speakers. Otherwise, we get into a nasty feedback loop situation. So anyway, the toll-free number again, 866-768-5483. And we're going to talk here for a while with Rachel Holt, who is one of the authors of an article that showed up in the Library Journal in May of this year, talking about the entry-level gap in employment for new librarians. And there's a whole, I don't want to say movement, I'm not sure it's a movement, but there's a group anyway called the Next Gen Librarians, who are somewhat less than happy with the state of the job market. So, Rachel, you want to fill us in on who you are and what you're doing and what your experience with the job market has been?
Well, I am in Dallas. I do have my MLS. I got it in 2003, but I've never actually held a job in a library. At the moment, I work for a private corporation. That sort of speaks somewhat to my experience in the job market. I had never worked in a library. I got my MLS straight out of my bachelor's degree. And when I went to try and look for a job, I realized that I needed a lot more than an MLS to become a professional librarian. And I really sort of found myself at wit's end because, on the one hand, I didn't have any experience. I needed experience, but no one would hire me because I didn't have experience.
Catch 22.
So I ended up, like I said, in a corporate job, and I consider myself sort of a feral librarian in that I do... library work, but I don't work in a library setting at all.
You may have just coined a new phrase, feral librarian. I like that. Well, tell me about the Next Gen group.
It's all of us who are sort of in a particular age range. I guess you could also call us like Gen X librarians, Generation X librarians. We've all graduated in recent years, the last 5 or 6 years. We sort of hit the job market just as the economy was slowing down with 9/11 and all of that mess. But we also sort of hit at a period of time where librarian education has shifted from the practice of librarianship to information science and technology. And so a lot of us get our MLS, but we don't actually have training in the practical skills of librarianship.
Where'd you get your MLS degree?
I got it at the University of North Texas.
Okay. See, that was your first mistake. You didn't come to Missouri.
I got it. You're right.
Yeah. How many people? I mean, I've cruised the Next Gen website and dipped into the archives of the web discussion group and all that. How many folks do you think we're talking about here? What's your sense of that?
Well, I did a little sort of informal poll of library schools last year, and from the numbers I got, it was I would say up to 30% of the people who are coming into the library workforce are under the age of 30. So it's a minority, but it's a growing minority, because more people are discovering librarianship at a younger age and coming in having not worked as librarians. So I would say probably about 30% of everybody who's out there in the library job market.
Yeah, I'm sort of thinking about the faces in my two classes that I've got this semester, and your 30% figure strikes me as about right. Which is certainly a larger percentage of folks directly out of their bachelor's degree than maybe we've had in the past. I was ancient. I was 30 something when I went back to get my master's degree. How I'm trying to think about how to phrase this. Of that gang, of the next gen gang, the people you're familiar with and have talked to, and you've obviously done some work on this, judging from the article in Library Journal. How many of these guys are geographically mobile?
That's a big issue. A lot of them are not. A lot of us are tied down, especially with student loan debt. Many of us have young families. Many of us just simply can't go anywhere. And that is very true, that the jobs that are open and available and where they're just begging for librarians is in the middle of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not where we can go all the time. And so we do find ourselves sort of, especially in the larger cities that have more than one library school, we're competing over these same jobs in these places, and we just can't get to where the jobs are plentiful.
Yeah, I have to point out that the University of North Texas and Texas Women's University are in the same town in Texas.
Yeah, they are.
Literally across the street from each other. And then there's another accredited LIS school at the University of Texas at Austin.
Right.
Of course, Texas is a big place. And we could have a fairly lengthy discussion about the difference between an information school and a library school.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Which I think you've figured out already. And that's a growing problem, I think, in library education. I have an article coming up in American Libraries in October, I think, that's going to address the issue of shortage of actual librarians in LIS faculty.
Right.
And which is also very real. One of the suggestions that you and Adrian Strock make in your article in Library Journal is that retirements and people are graying. I mean, there's no doubt the profession is getting older.
Yeah.
In fact, my hair is just dead white. There's no way of getting around it. That a number of those jobs aren't translating into entry-level positions.
Exactly. There were a number of things that sort of struck us as off about all the talk of the library shortage and we desperately need library workers. First of all, just because someone is getting older doesn't necessarily mean they have any interest in retiring. Particularly if the economy stays stagnant, a lot of people are going to stay past retirement age, which is going to affect those numbers. Also, there was some confusion over whether we have a current library shortage or a projected librarian shortage. And if we have a current librarian shortage, then yes, we need lots of people in library school, and there should be lots of positions open for library school graduates. But if it's a projected shortage, what are we supposed to do in the meantime? You know, in the meantime...
Yeah, work in private industry in Dallas.
Don't exist.
Yeah. I think... From what I've read from the Institute of Museum and Library Services was the outfit that was really pushing this graying of the profession and got money. And let's face it, the president's wife is a librarian, and that's really the source of where all this comes from. And yet, when they really started on this, and when Laura Bush pushed the administration into sinking money into the Institute of Museum and Library Services, it was very early in the Bush administration, and at that time, the data really looked like we were going to have, you know, a fairly major shortage. And then, as you pointed out a minute or two ago, 9/11 came along and the economy started going soft and people started putting retirement off and all that.
Right.
And maybe folks were a little slow to pick up on that part of it.
And the other thing that happened is, as the economy slowed down, a lot of the public institutions that would have hired all these new librarians ended up with no money.
Right.
And had to combine positions or just eliminate them or put off hiring.
Here's a thought. Years ago, in my first library job was at the University of Northern Iowa, and the director there, the fellow named Donald O. Rod, who had been director there for a million years, and well, that's an exaggeration, but a long time. And he told me once that there was a period during the 60s, and you know, when the economy was still good, that his sense of it was easier for a while to create new librarian positions than it was to create staff positions or paraprofessional positions. And that what a lot of, at least, academic libraries were doing at that stage of the game was creating librarian positions who the graduates of my day and earlier subsequently wound up doing what amounted to clerical work, and there was a fair amount of uproar early in my career about that. And I wonder if part of that is what's coming home to roost, is that these librarian positions that weren't really librarian positions are getting converted back to what they should have been in the first place. Does any of that resonate as a possibility?
It seems to me that what's happening now is almost the opposite. Now it's easier to create paraprofessional positions and to cut back on librarian positions. So in lots of libraries, it seems like, at least judging from the job descriptions that I surveyed, you have fewer and fewer actual librarians being hired and more part-time and paraprofessional staff being hired. Because they are not as high on the pay scale, and they're easier on the budget.
Yeah, yeah. And librarians have certainly gotten pricier in the time I've been in the field, and we should be genuinely ashamed of ourselves at what we pay some of the paraprofessional and technical staff.
Yeah, indeed.
It's you must have looked at Michael Rogers' article in LJ, September of 2004. If I got that right, yeah, September. Does that ring? Where are all the library jobs?
Yeah, I believe I did look at that. You'll have to remind me what he said.
Well, the thing I'm picking on here is he's talking about in sort of a vaguely snotty way here about newbie librarians on the new library electronic list, and somebody apparently says, I heard about $70,000 a year librarian jobs when I enrolled in the MLS program, and I'm thinking, what $70,000 job? I'd like to have a $70,000 job. You know, do you know any of the background on that?
Well, actually, I think that was a quote of mine from the listserv. I do remember that now that you say that. I said that.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know this. This was not a setup, folks.
No, it wasn't at all. I was actually very surprised to see my pullout quote there on the page in Library Journal, or was it American Libraries?
LJ. It was Library Journal.
It was LJ. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I had. That was how I initially heard about library school, was that I had helped a professor at one of the retail jobs that I worked at, and she told me that I could get an MLS and go work at a corporate library, actually working for the corporation I work for now, but I certainly don't make $70,000 a year.
Yeah, kid, I don't make $70,000.
You know, that was her sort of pitch to me.
Yeah, but so that was not somebody in library education that told you that, though.
No, it was. She was an LIS professor.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I apologize. there may be $70,000 corporate library jobs, but they sure aren't for folks right out of the gate with their MLS degree.
Boy, they sure aren't. That's the truth.
You know. Okay, we actually have a phone call here. I think that's what they're telling me.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Norma is coming on, and she wants to talk about internships.
Okay.
And here's Norma.
All right.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hello, Ms. Holt.
Hello.
I have a question for you. I am an instructor in nursing, and one of the problems that we've had in our profession is not having enough clinical experience of students when they graduate. And it sounds as though that may be something that your profession is struggling with as well. And I'm wondering if you what is in your educational preparation or even post-graduation, is there any type of internships or clinical programs that librarians do?
Can I talk now? Oh, gosh.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you for your question, Norma.
And I'll take the answer off the air if you'd like.
Okay.
Oh,
right.
Heck no.
Thank you.
Go for it. So.
For another paper that I wrote on the MLS education, I came across an article that surveyed the different requirements, course requirements, across all 56 accredited MLS programs. And the thing that I noticed was that I believe it was only 9 of those programs that required any kind of practicum or internship in order to graduate. So library experience is a very insignificant part of the MLS education right now. And
they're working on it.
Okay.
It's dead. Go ahead.
Okay. So, yes, definitely making library experience an integral part of the education through an apprenticeship, through a work-study program, through, you know, increasing the internship requirements, really making sure that people who are going for a Master's of Library Science understand what it is to work in a library. I think that, yes, it's very important. And I don't know, in some cases there is, you know, a very good relationship between a library school and its local libraries. In many other cases, no such relationship exists. And I think that that's also very important, that educators and practitioners get back on the same page as far as what they expect from these new graduates. And part of doing that is cooperating in training these graduates to make sure they have the best of both worlds, the theory, the education, and the practice.
I'm going to put in an unabashed commercial here.
Okay.
Missouri is one of the schools that requires a practicum. People can opt out of it, but only if they've had substantial library experience, and we look for, when we're looking at that substantially, it has to be a professional level or close to it. We're not something talking about somebody who's just been filing papers for a couple of years. And you actually have to go to your advisor to get a waiver from taking the practicum. So our program is very much, that's just part of the deal, and we've got a full-time or a person who manages the practicum, and we've got, you know, great relationships with half the libraries in the state or all of the libraries in the state. We've certainly had no trouble placing our practicum folks. And I got to say that the huge majority of our graduates, I'm thinking about a fellow that graduated just last year. Rachel was the same as you. He came to us right out of his bachelor's degree. And I think he had some, you know, student assistant time in the college library. And went right out of here, unfortunately, to the University of New Orleans, but, you know, he didn't know Katrina was in the wings at that stage of the game. If you had to give advice to people looking around for a library school, and maybe we shouldn't get names in here, I don't know, but to me, looking at those 56 schools you're talking about, there were library schools and then there are places that maybe aren't library schools. Do you want to comment on that at all?
Well, I think, you know, I see what you're saying, that there are places who the schools that really prepare librarians,
right,
and concentrate on preparing competent practitioners. And I think it would, you know, if I were to give any advice, I would say look for a program that obviously incorporates a practicum or an internship that, you know, really sort of emphasizes, again, the practice of librarianship, either through internships, requiring internships, or through coursework that focuses on just sort of the day-to-day work of a librarian.
Well, I don't know. We could argue about the coursework a little bit. I mean, I've always thought you get the theory, you get the idea right, and the practice kind of follows along from that. This guy named Jesse Scherer, who was one of the great gurus of library land, dead all these many years, who said that it went approximately like this: the how of librarianship changes as we speak, the why always remains. And I've always liked that. And goodness knows the how is changing. In the first half of my career, pretty much nothing changed. But boy, let me tell you about the last 15 years.
Right.
It's been pretty exciting. An awful lot of changes. And I always tell the students we've got coming in, you know, you got to be able to live with ambiguity.
Yeah.
Half of the coursework is as much an exercise in critical thinking as anything else, because we can't possibly keep doing things the way we've always been doing them.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Okay, so if you're talking about, you know, recapitulating library practice, but obviously you understand that changes. So.
Yeah, and I think what I mean is sort of there's been a shift away from, like, sort of the basics of conducting a reference interview or cataloging a book.
Yeah.
You know, you have a lot of students now who graduate MLS programs and don't know how to do those things.
Yeah.
And certainly those are sort of core competencies in our profession that, you know, whether you're doing them manually or by a computer, you're still going to have that task to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I'll come back to, obviously, I've got a drum I'm beating here, the difference between a real library school and the information folks who, you know, it's perfectly legitimate stuff. It's a good area of learning, but to me, it's not necessarily what, you know, Daniel Boone Regional Library in Columbia, Missouri needs, or there really is a Muleshoe, Texas. I can't think of any other small town in Texas right offhand. I'm actually from New Mexico, so I take kind of a dim view of Texas. This cultural imperialism thing going on, but. So, you know, I was thinking, in getting ready for this, and I was reading all the journals, articles, and some of the letters to the editor, and one of which was yours about promised a feast but given a famine or something along that line.
Yeah.
And the geographic mobility thing kept popping into my head. I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with the deputy state librarian of one of the Plains states, and he was saying how blessed hard it was to recruit county librarians for his state. Now, I did not get very deeply into the salary issue with him, but I know that the cost of living there is certainly not what it is in Dallas, for instance.
Right.
And I was thinking about one of the emails I saw on the Next Gen list, somebody complaining bitterly of how hard it was to get a job in the Bay Area. And I can only think, well, duh. You know, I mean, of course it's hard to get a job in the Bay Area. Didn't you think about that before you know, there are librarian jobs. On the other hand, I do understand that people are geographically bound. You mentioned at one point in one of our earlier email exchanges, you know, your husband.
Yeah.
So clearly, you know, you can't uproot the poor guy. I don't know what he does for a living. And in a way, it was a lot easier 30-something years ago when I started this to pick up my family and go and all that.
It's certainly the case that with each generation, and particularly our generation, you know, our debt-to-income ratio is probably higher than any generation at our point of
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just becomes increasingly difficult just to make ends meet. And then on top of that, to have to think about moving.
Yeah.
You know, and just to get a job that might pay you $30,000 a year.
Yeah.
And it's a really difficult situation, I think, for everybody, for the people who are trying to hire and the people who need the job.
It's the whole student debt load thing is just shocking. My older daughter, who's well into her 30s now, a couple of years after she graduated undergrad, thanked me for not letting her take out student loans while she was getting that, because she got out into the professional working world and heard about the payments that her colleagues were making, and she's thinking, I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really outrageous. You know, my husband and I it's basically a mortgage.
Yeah.
We're
going to
be paying student loans for 30 years.
Yeah.
We are certainly not alone.
Very best students I had from the University of Arizona has got a debt load that I just find shocking.
Yeah.
And she had a similar experience to yours. I mean, she was geographically mobile, but she was trying to get a job in one particular city, which is just a miserable job market. And after, you know, kind of beating her head against the wall for a while, Terza Ewing is on the phone.
Okay.
We're gonna talk to Terza right now.
Okay.
Terza.
Hello, Dr. Stevie.
Hi, kiddo. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well.
You're not Terza Ewing anymore, are you?
No, I'm Terza Becker.
Yeah, okay. Well, you'll always be Terza Ewing to me. I know that.
That's okay.
That fella you married and all that. Okay, I'm going to let you talk to Rachel.
All right. Well, hi, Rachel. Thanks for doing the show. I just wanted to talk about my experience looking for a job in the Denver area. And I think Dr. Stevie was talking a minute ago about San Francisco. And, well, yeah, duh, of course, it's hard to find a job. And I know Denver is kind of the same way. But I'm getting this kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't feeling from my job search. I've had 4 interviews, and I've been rejected for 3 of the jobs, and one of them is still pending. And the one bit of explanation I've had is that in one case, they gave the job to somebody who, you know, was going to be content with part-time forever, was not getting a master's degree. You know, they didn't say that, but
right.
just that she was perfect for the job. And they really like me, and they think I'm going to be a great librarian, but, you know, the implication was that they were kind of fearing I was going to move on to bigger and better things. And I'm also getting the sense that once I do have the degree and I'm qualified to apply for, you know, quote-unquote real librarian jobs, I'm not going to get those either because I'll be competing with people who have, you know, 5 years experience and that sort of thing. So, you know, right now I would like to have a part-time job so I can concentrate on school and my practicum, but they don't seem to want to take me. It's almost like they're afraid of me because I'm getting the degree. And I wanted to know if that's common and if there's anything I can do about it besides lying about my intentions about trying to get a job when I have the degree, you know?
Well, I've heard the horror stories. I've heard, you know, about someone who was a paraprofessional for 12 years, got her master's degree, and was rejected because she didn't have any real library experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, you know, just awful. And, you know, I don't know. Personally, just from what I've read and looking over all of these job descriptions, I think the more library experience you have, the better off you'll be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can find a paraprofessional job where they're willing to support you, and I'm sure they're out there, you know, I would say stick with it. I really would not advise anyone to go into an MLS without having built up their resume.
Yeah, I mean, I do have some library experience. I worked on the reference desk at Ellis at MU last year, and, you know, I am doing my practicum right now in a very good museum library here where I'm doing everything from cataloging to, you know, reference to circulation because it's such a small outfit. It's a good place to do a practicum. And, you know, everybody nods and acts like that's all good experience, but then I don't get hired. So, you know, again, it is early, and maybe I'm being impatient. I only moved here a month ago, but...
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I've noticed is that there are a lot of tenured librarians, people who have had, you know, 4 or 5 years experience who are going for these entry-level positions,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting hired.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wish that I did have an easy solution, you know. I don't know.
it's sort of
part of it, you know, part of it is budget, part of it is expectation,
mm-hmm.
as far as who they had in mind to hire to begin with. I think we're just sort of, we're stuck. We're in a difficult place, this group of librarians. or sort of in an in-between place in the profession.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the best thing we can do is sort of make our own way as far as piecing together paraprofessional jobs, get the degree, find somebody who will hire you, and maybe even look beyond libraries.
Hmm. Okay.
No. I don't want to lose either one of you to library land. So.
Well, you can
I
be a librarian
work in a public library.
That's what I
want to
do. But, you know, at some point, the economics of the situation will, you know, dictate what I have to do. I mean,
exactly.
Again, maybe I'm being impatient, but.
Well, you know, I mean, I work in a corporation right now, and at first, my job had nothing to do with libraries, but. Now they've realized I'm a librarian. I'm starting to do research. I'm starting to do collection development. I'm starting to do all the things that I was trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are a lot of other places where our skills are very useful and maybe where there are more opportunities. So, you know, unfortunately, and I'm sorry, Dr. Seavey, to say this, but, you know, sometimes, you know, some of us are just going to have to look in places other than libraries because there's only so many times we can beat our head against that wall.
Well, it's interesting, though, in a way, you're creating your own job there. And,
yeah. And
I have heard that story on a number of occasions. People who will go into some place and they'll just go, oh, you can do this, you can do that. And the next thing you know, you may not be called a librarian, but guess what? You're doing collection development and reference and, you know, research and organization and all that kind of stuff that we all do, but maybe the job title doesn't say that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's exactly what's happened. I've been here 2.5 years, and it's very much evolving into exactly the kind of librarian job I would have gotten anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And as I said, I have heard this story before. And, Tertia, I've got to point out to you, I told you Denver was miserable before you went back there.
I know, but I have to live here, you know.
I know. And if you were listening, Rachel and I were talking about the geographic mobility issue earlier. And
that's what prompted me to call, actually.
Yeah, it is a very real issue, and it's not as easy as it used to be. And, you know, I look at people, young families and all that, and you get a house and a dog and, you know, 2.3 children and all that sort of thing, and you can't move around quite as easily as you could.
Right.
So we've hit the end of the time here, and I want to know if either one of you got any final thoughts, and we'll go with Rachel first, since she was the guest, and then, Tertia, you hang on a minute. And, Rachel, any final thoughts, words of advice, that sort of thing?
Well, I think, you know, we are sort of in a transition period, and it's hard on everybody to adjust their expectations and maybe sort of think outside the box as far as what it means to train librarians, and at what point do we sort of answer to progress, and what point do we answer to tradition?
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to sort of make sure that we're not just, you know, abandoning graduates with an education that they can't use. On the other hand, we want to make sure that our library practitioners are absolutely up to date and can continue to grow and progress their skills and their knowledge to provide better services to our patrons.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, you know, the word is temperance, as far as not going too far one way or the other.
Right. That sounds like good advice. Tertia, any final thoughts?
I guess I just should say something positive about the job search experience, which is that I've done 4 interviews now, and I've gotten a little better at them with each one I've gone to. But just for anyone out there who's going to start interviewing for public library jobs, whether they're paraprofessional or a real librarian job, watch out for the question about which book would you recommend for a certain, you know, patron. And they actually asked me which Dewey section I would find it in. So I think she's right. It's, you have to know a lot of those practical details, and you don't always think about that when you're in school. So, but you learn as you go.
Funny thing, I have my collection development course reading 7 fiction books this semester, so we'll have some recommendations. Well, Rachel, I want to thank you for participating here. This is the first program we've done on First Tuesday, and we hope there'll be many more. For Rachel and Tertia and anybody listening, the next program in October will be Robert Sidney Martin, Bob Martin, who just finished his tour as head of the Institute of Museum and Library Services. Bob and I have been friends for more years than either one of us. Well, he had hair and mine was brown when we met. And we'll be talking to him about sort of the flip side of what we've been talking about with Rachel and some of his experiences in library land. He's a real interesting guy. And we hope to hear you all much, much later. Thank you and good night.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye, thank you.
And that's all for this evening. Future programs announced over the sizzled LIS list, or watch this spot on your bookmarked Zone Radio webpage. Zone Radio, managed by Chris Amelung. In the booth tonight, the ever-popular Paul Turner. Backup vocals by Judy Ritchie's Reflector Crowd, and lurking in the background, the lads from LAPS, the Learning and Performance Support Team. The intro music was by Richard Strauss. The exit tune is The Last Waltz by the band.